A quick note at the start of this episode, we wanted to include a trigger warning as this episode contains a reference to suicide. Hi, I'm Kim Bussey Chamberlain, a paramedic, mum, and author. As paramedics, we're often asked, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? And I'm here to encourage a different kind of conversation, to uncover what it takes to work in these frontline roles and the privilege we experience in meeting and connecting with patients. This podcast is all about what it's really like to be a paramedic or any frontline uniform professional. Each week, you get to hear from the real humans under the uniform, the memorable moments they've experienced in their jobs, and the people that have stayed with them for life. Let's hear what life is really like beneath the blue lights. Welcome to Beneath the Blue Lights, the paramedic podcast. I'm Kim, your host for the series. Today, I'm really excited to have Andy Tweedy, a firefighter, on the show. As one of the other thirds of 999 Trio, we often work closely with our fire service counterparts. Obviously, as part of the emergency services family, there's also a lot of crossover in our jobs. Arguably, the main difference is that firefighters still get to sleep on the night shifts.
All right.
I'm sure Andy will correct me if I'm wrong. It's a job that I hugely admire. One that takes courage, compassion, problem solving, and both physical and mental strength. As a paramedic, when you attend a serious road traffic accident where your patient is trapped in the wreckage, we're all but helpless until firefighters turn up. The troops arrive and it's like some kind of awesome choreographed dance where every person seemingly instinctively knows what their job is in the team effort to open up the mangled wreckage. We could have all the best medical interventions in the world, but ultimately, they're all useless if we can't get to our patients. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the two services also joined forces, with firefighters helping to drive ambulances so that we could split our crews to provide more medical coverage. Their support was invaluable. So Andy, it's awesome to have you on the show. Thank you very much for coming. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So we've already discussed that you might swear and that's your mum's fault. let's start off with a little bit of background on you. Can you tell us how you got into being a firefighter, how long you've been doing the job, and kind of what you do now, what your day-to-day is?
How did I get into being a firefighter? I was working at a gym at the time, and I'd always thought about joining the services, as in the military or police at one stage. A guy I was training with, he's a firefighter, said, have you thought about joining the fire brigade? And I said, well, I don't know. It's quite hard to get into, isn't it? And he said, well, you're exactly what we want. You know, fit young guy, keen. Why don't you come to station and have a look? So I was 21, 22 at the time. Anyway, so yeah, it was a chance conversation, got me thinking. And then I went down to station and had a look around and had a chat with some of the guys and just thought, this is me all over. It's basically, my background is actually as a rugby player as well. So it was just like stepping into another changing room for me with all the guys and girls as well, mm-hmm. all the chat and banter and stuff that goes with it. And I thought, this is definitely for me. And then scroll on, it took me about, I think probably 4 years to get in with trying different brigades, then waiting for a long period of time when I did actually get a place to start my place at training school. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I was in. I've been in the job now for, I think I'm just shy 13 years. I'm still a firefighter, although currently I'm what we call as acting up as an officer, a leading firefighter at the moment, which is a big change, to say the least, but a good change. And that's really it. That's where I'm at now.
So one of the questions that we get asked as paramedics that we really hate being asked is, what's the worst job that you've ever seen? What's the worst thing you've ever seen at work? We really don't like talking about it. And it kind of shuts down conversation for us. And I'm kind of guessing that you have a similar thing probably in your role as well. People wanting to know what you get up to on the job, but assuming that it's all doom and gloom and really big fire emergencies and things. So do you ever get asked that question or anything like it? And how do you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a common question the public ask you is, what's the worst thing you've seen? How do I handle it? I don't really know. I tend to tell them the funny stories, the things that they don't expect to see. Well, I mean, in our job, so diverse, you see, You see so many random, bizarre things from a lockout with paramedics, for example. We've had this quite recently, and the guys stood there naked with a set of cowboy boots on and a Mexican hat. You know, what do you do it from? So, you know, from that to some things that, you know, you can't really unsee, to be fair, but you kind of just, you compartmentalize it, I suppose, and you move on from it. In terms of at parties and things like that, people have often asked me those questions, and sometimes it's quite, depending on who the person is, the shock factor is to say, well, there was an incident and or whatever it might be, which is quite nasty and tends to shut them up pretty quickly and they want to move away from you. So there is that, but that depends on the person you're speaking to, really. You know, overall, I would say when people find out I'm a firefighter, it's an extremely positive response. And luckily for us, we're always, by the public, we're always generally admired and waved at, particularly from young children and stuff like that. They see us as Fireman Sam, I suppose, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Boy is mad about at the moment is Fireman Sam.
Right. There you go.
He's always running around the house telling me he's being Fireman Sam. And Fireman Sam seems to do a lot of things that he shouldn't be doing, like climbing up the outside of the staircase. And I'm like, I don't think that gives you a free pass to behave like this.
Yeah, well, give him another 15, 20 years and see what happens there, because there's plenty of firefighters do stuff like that all the time. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'll tell him where he can direct that energy when he's a bit older. So yeah, I guess it's people just want to talk to us about our jobs. And I think the question comes from like a positive place, I guess. Like you say, people are always interested in the job that you do when you tell them that you're working as a firefighter or as a paramedic or something like that. They're usually keen to hear about it.
Yeah.
But maybe they just don't necessarily know the best way to go about that. So is there like a specific conversation that you would like to have with the public or about your role or things you think people should know about it or anything like that?
I think one of the big questions is often people have to say, and I don't, it's difficult to go down this route, but when people find out how much you earn, they always say, oh, you're not paid enough.
They choke on their canopy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you're not paid enough. And that's not a conversation I like to have, because I've always said I'm very, very lucky to do my job. The fact is the majority of us firefighters, we have to work a second job. If you want to have a family, if you want to live in a half decent house, you've got to have a second job. That's often the question that I get asked, and you've all got second jobs. And yeah, we have, and some of us have second jobs we love doing, and some of us don't. But essentially, again, it's a route that's very difficult. But I can honestly say I've not had a pay rise worth speaking about since I joined the job. So you kind of go, well, thanks for all the claps and applause, and it's the same old adage of, yep, thank you for banging the pots and pans during COVID. I mean, I didn't drive ambulances. I wasn't one of them that went out and did it. I did my job as a firefighter. That's my priority. That's what I know I'm good at. Is being a firefighter. But plenty of my colleagues did go and drive ambulances and deserve all the credit for driving during COVID-19 and great. But the claps and applause don't. You know, ultimately it's a job, and ultimately you want to get paid fairly and well. And I don't think that's a conversation I have more often than not with people at parties, socials, whatever. And it's a pat on the back and a thanks very much. And then on to the next person, you know, and that's it.
Yeah. I think it's one of those interesting things, isn't it? Because like you say, it can be like an uncomfortable conversation. But also it's one of those, we're all in jobs and professions that people massively appreciate. No more so than when they really actually need us. And there's so much thanks. And then I think there's that moment of realization, because I'm not sure people necessarily know stuff like that. I think sometimes in my experience, the perception is that firefighters have second jobs because the shift patterns allow it. Yeah. And there's like all these convenient excuses that people, you know, might hear. I don't know where from.
That's a really good
point.
But
therefore, they excuse it like that. And so they're like, oh, well, that's why. That's nice for them. And actually, it's not because of that. It's because of the money. It's because of the numbers don't add up. And that is a conversation that we do need to have, because I think across all of the services and even things like midwives and nurses and things, they're saying, you know, this massive increase in nurses using food banks and things like that. Well, that's just absurd, isn't it, really? People massively, in these key positions, key roles, who are having to work second jobs, who are having to access food banks, is just, well, it's just madness. and I don't think that that's really what the general public would want for those people either, to be honest.
No, I think it's a conversation that we none of us want to have in the services. You go police, paramedics, teachers, whatever. It's definitely the pat on the back and the hearty handshake is all good and well. Until, you know, as far apart as until we walk out the doors and say, like, we, you know, a strike or whatever. And that is never ever an easy decision for a firefighter to make. And mm-hmm. we're not, I wouldn't say we're in a lucky position to do it because we've got a union the way we have, but it's a decision that is very, very heavy to bear. None of us want to do that. You know, we don't get paid to go out and strike. We don't get anything for it. You're out the door. Yeah. You're losing money. People don't realize that as well. That's the thing. And what I would say is try doing 2 day shifts, 2 nights, and then try and get back into a normal sleep pattern after that as well. you're not, you know, I'm at a pretty busy place, busy station, and we're in and out the doors a lot on days and nights. And it throws you out, you know, it definitely throws you out. And I, you know, at the age I am now, in my early 40s, you definitely start to feel it. As a young fella or a young lass, it's no problem. It's not a big deal. But as an older mm-hmm. guy, you definitely start to feel those heavy night shifts, definitely.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think that's definitely paramedics really laughed / cried maybe when it was announced that, yeah, absolutely, we'd be expected to work till 68, I think it was, thinking, what?
Yeah,
but, I mean, yeah. How is a 68-year-old going to do these shift patterns and then do the physical side of the job? Like, you know, carrying some pretty heavy people up and down stairs and getting them in and out of really, you know, tricky situations and into the back of an ambulance and then performing that job. It's just at 68, you'll be knackered by then.
Yeah, I mean, that's the exact same with the fire service as well. 60-year-old firefighter getting in the back of a truck, you're asking them to move quickly into you know, let's to be dramatic, into a burning building and get someone out. You know, 60-year-olds in an office can barely move, never mind having to
do
that.
It's just such a disconnect between the reality of what the mental job requires.
Exactly, it's mental. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, there's some fit 60-year-olds out there and mm-hmm. that's great, but I don't know any 60-year-olds that be able to do what we do at the moment, you know. No. It's crazy. And I tell you, when the older firefighters get towards the end of the time, they're done. Physically and mentally, they're done. And you ask them to go on for another 5 or 10 years, with what they've seen, how the job is, the physicality of it, the nature of the shift pattern. And don't get me wrong, it sounds like I'm whinging and moaning about the job. It's not. I love the job. It's fantastic. And I'm very privileged mm-hmm. to do it. But I still don't understand how a guy running around a football pitch can £100,000 a week. And like I said before, like teachers, paramedics, police, firefighters, nurses, doctors are at the bottom end. It doesn't make and everyone says that doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't.
I mean, you have to really love the job, and that's the thing. Like, it's lucky that most people in these roles do really love the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you have to put up with that.
Exactly.
And so you have to really love it. In terms of, you were saying you tend to tell the like lighter side of things and funny stories. Do you have any particular situations or jobs that you've been to that have stuck with you that always come to mind when you're thinking of ridiculous places and situations you found yourself in as a firefighter, or anything that stuck with you because it's been more like heartwarming? Or what are your things that you think will stay with you for a long time?
I think the rescues are important. We had a rescue about 3-4 weeks ago. We took a guy out of a flat in the area where I work. We pulled him out of a flat. There was a light, and then I saw him at strangely enough, we had an RTA or RTC, depending where you are, a car accident on the same road about I don't know, like 5 doors down from where we had that fire. And he approached the truck. It was all said and done. The job was all done with. And he approached the truck and said, I don't know if it was you guys, but you guys pulled me out of my flat. You rescued me from my flat a couple of weeks back. And one of the guys in the truck pointed and said, it's that guy over there is pointing at me. And he came up. He definitely had a few beers, let's just say that, which was probably the same sort of state he was in when we pulled him out of his flat. But he gave me a massive, he put me a massive hug, and he was like, "Don't ever leave me." And his name is actually Muhammad Ali, which I thought he was taking the Mickey, but it's actually true. Things like that are fantastic. That's so rare, though. That sort of thing is so rare to meet someone that you've helped again.
Yeah.
Often we don't find out, firefighters, we never find out the people we help how they are. You know, I've never known, like, with regards to car accidents or serious car accidents or fires or anything like that, how the people are doing. The only one time I have actually sought out some information on was actually on a dog that I helped rescue. So the dog was stuck in an uncompromised position at a fence, and we had to get him, the RSPCA took him to the vet near where we are, and I popped in to see if he was all right, and he was fine, he was bouncing around, so that was nice. But probably one of the stories I do like to tell was when I was a recruit, I just joined the job, was maybe months in the job, and we got the stereotypical cat stuck up a tree. So I was the youngest in the back, I had two of the old boys with me, one driving, one sitting in the back with me, and a very experienced officer in charge. So we got there, RSPCA were there, and they said, well, he's right at the very top of the tree. He's 20 years old, and his name's Bubbles. The cat was a 20-year-old cat called Bubbles. So the woman at the bottom of the tree was actually very distressed. It was her cat. So we put a 9-meter ladder up against the tree, and of course it was the recruit, up you go, son. So I went, okay. And I was halfway up the ladder, my radio goes off, and it's my officer in charge, and he says to me, Andy, the cat's scared of men. I said, right. And I've got a yellow hat on, bright yellow gloves, fire kit. I mean, what am I going to do here? I'm actually allergic to cats as well. That's another story. And he says, you need to speak in a high-pitched voice when you get to the top, so it's not scared of you. So I got to the top of the tree, and Bubbles is sat on a branch. He's not going anywhere. And I've gone, Bubbles, Bubbles. They've looked down, and everyone's just in stitches crying, like this man just speaking in a high-pitched voice. Anyway, I got hold of Bubbles after a bit of a fight. He didn't like it very much. Threw a few punches at me, I should say. Then he clung to my tunic as we climbed down the ladder. I got down to the bottom of the ladder, and they literally couldn't get him off my tunic. They were like tugging him like this, trying to get him off my tunic. And then when they did get him off my tunic, again, he swung his paws around, tried to take a chunk out of the RSPCA person, and then just took off. But the woman at the bottom of the tree says, well, he'll come back home eventually. You're a hero. I was like, great. And the boys, my nickname for the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks was Bubbles, until they realized that I liked it, I was okay with it, and then they were like, oh, I can't call you that anymore. And that was that.
It's not doing the trick.
No, exactly. So that's one. The other story I've got is, this was a couple of years ago, we had a, it was a bin of light. It was stereotypical, like 3 o'clock in the morning, Saturday night, kids probably set fire to a bin, and we had to go over a fence to get to the bin with a hose reel. Mm-hmm. So I put a ladder up, climbed over it, and as I got up the ladder slipped a little bit, and as I came down the other side, my tunic and my leggings got caught on the top of the fence. So I was hanging from the top of the fence like this at 3 o'clock in the morning, and rather than help me, the guys left me there where they dealt with it and just left me hanging there. So yeah, there's no sympathy in the job from the rest of the guys, but it was embarrassing, it's very brutal. Embarrassing, yeah. That's fine.
I'm surprised it didn't tear. I feel like every time a paramedic tries to even get over like the tiniest white picket fence, the trousers rip, and then you're there like with your pants showing through. Every time it's like, I mean, practically all you have to do is bend over in the paramedic uniform and it rips at the seams, like always on the arse as well. I'll just always remember when I was a trainee and my mentor was like a brilliant medic, and he was on a job and he said, oh, got me started like doing some CPR and stuff. It was one of my first resuscitations. And then he bent down to show me a piece of equipment his trousers split right the way up the back, and he's wearing he was wearing boxer shorts that had his wife's photo in little hearts all over them. He was like, oh God, I'm not going to live this down. He was like, you're not going to take me seriously now. How am I going to train you?
Brilliant.
But yeah, it was very funny. Sounds like the uniform holds up better for you guys.
It's just a fire kit. Yeah. So that doesn't go anywhere, fortunately. But yeah, they left me hanging, literally left me hanging. And then we decided, after taking several photographs and phones and everything, decided they'd help me down. So that was good. Brilliant. Thanks, guys.
Eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but for paramedics as well in our roles, mental health is obviously a big thing. And notoriously, we've been really terrible at looking after it or talking about it or acknowledging it might be something that should be on our radar. And I think we still don't like talking about it, but it's starting to get a little bit better and people are at least acknowledging that it's something we should probably try and look after, especially if you're looking at longer career times and just making sure you stay in good shape, I guess, mentally as well as physically through the job. So what does mental health mean to you, like in your role, and what's it like for you guys, basically?
So we are very fortunate in the fire. We have something called the Firefighter Charity, which they are currently, probably with the way the world is now, they're shit hot on mental health. You can phone, there's a phone line you can call. There's various centres we can go to around the country. There's like, I think there's two or three they have, and maybe just two now. I think one's closed, sadly, but I think it's maybe two or three centres anyway that we can go, and you can take family, the supply counselling and stuff like that if you're struggling a bit. In terms of the organisation I work for, again, I think it's something that they're pushing really hard at the moment, which is a really good thing. I think years gone by, it, like any organization, to be fair to them, it wasn't really a thing. It was just, you know, take a couple of weeks off, sort yourself out, and get back to work. They do have counseling services, which are well used, as far as I'm aware. In terms of how we deal with it on the job, I mean, it's black humor. It's dark humor. It is, and this is the problem, is that the way the world's going is that you can't say that. People would think we're absolutely off our fucking tits when they hear us speak. And I understand it. I mean, put it this way. After maybe a couple of years of joining the job, my mother-in-law was still a childminder, and she banned me from coming around the house after shift after a night shift in the morning, because it takes a while to switch off from station life. You know, it might just be a couple of hours, but you know, like, you're not really acceptable in normal society for a while with things that come out your mouth. And it's not always the way. It's just the way that maybe my watch at the time dealt with things. We look after each other. That's the thing as well. That's the wonderful thing about what we do in the fire service, is that the older boys always look after the younger lads. I mean, what an incident I had was, we had a lady threatening to throw herself off top of a building, basically. It's like three-story shopping dwellings, which she did. And I happened to be at the bottom of the ladder, and she landed right next to me. And that, you know, we just, what did I do? The paramedics went round, the doctors were there, the police were there. I just stepped to one side, and because I can't do anything at that point. And then I got back in the truck, and we drove off. As simple as that. The next day, that morning, in fact, when I pulled up at my house, I got a phone call from one of the older boys. One of the older boys didn't say that much to me, because they don't in the fire brigade. They sort of, they'll just suss you out, take your time. Okay, what's this lad made of, or what's this lass made of? Okay, let's just see. And then, you know, it's acceptance. Slowly but surely, they draw you in. And I knew at that point that they really cared about me, because he didn't say much at stage. He didn't have to. He'd done 20 plus years by this point, and well respected within the job. And he phoned me up and said, "You're right, boy." And I said, "Yeah, I'm all right." He goes, "Well, what about that lady chucked myself off the building?" And I said, "No, I'm all right." He said, "Right, he got my number," and that was it. But that's how a lot of it's dealt with. Black humor. You know, I won't go into things that we I mean, there's nothing that's completely unacceptable, we would say. You know, there is a line. Everyone's got a line. But you have to deal with it in a way that is funny. It might not be what's actually happened. It might be something around the incident that's happened. You know, and that's generally how we deal with it.
The black humor as well is a really big theme, I think, for everyone, for us as well. It's a huge part of like coping mechanisms. And I would say like that dark sense of humor, it's never like at the expense of like our patients.
Exactly.
But it's around the situation that we find ourselves
in. Yes, definitely.
And still probably people would be really horrified by that or by the like things that we find funny in these situations. But if we don't do that, then I just actually don't know how you would cope. So it's a really, and I guess the best way for me to describe it is that when my wife first met me, she made me do a psychopath test because she was like, "You're not normal. This is the way I've heard you talk about these things is not okay."
It's right.
Not normal.
Okay. Yeah.
And so she made me do this psychopath test. And then I passed. I wasn't a psychopath. She was like, "Well, the test is obviously wrong. It's flawed." And then like a couple of weeks later, we'd been dating. She was going to meet some of my friends who were all paramedics as well. They were all coming around to the house because we happened to have a day where everyone happened to have a day off, which never happens. And we were just going to have some drinks and she was going to meet them all. And one of my friends started telling a story about one of the jobs he'd done and someone else chipped in with something else. And it was really, really funny. None of us thought anything of it. And I think my now wife was sat at the table at the time, like, "What the hell? Who are these people?" And then she afterwards was like, "Well, they're just like you, aren't they? They're all psychopaths as well. I don't think it's okay." And I was like, "Well, you like me, so I'm just gonna take that as you like them as well." So a successful meeting of my mates. And then afterwards she was like, "Okay, but when we hang out with my friends, we're gonna have to have some kind of signal where if I put my hand on your knee, it means shut up or stop telling that story because it's not okay to tell that in front of paramedics." Yeah. So, and she still does that now. She'll be like, "That's enough. Thank you."
I get the elbow in the chest or in the shoulder. Yeah. Don't say that. Yeah.
Nope. I think it's important that it is something that gives us relief in otherwise like super heavy situations.
Yeah, I mean, I think like what person is, you know, I was about to say what, it was slightly unhinged, but we all have our. I shouldn't say that. Shouldn't I say there you go. I'm away again. what person in the right mind wants to run into a building that's on fire and get a kick out of it? You know, and that ultimately is what most of us want to do. You know, that's why I've waited for so long to start climbing the ranks, and because I love going into fires. I love it. I just have such a buzz doing it, you know, and people, this is the other thing as well, is that if we get a fire, so say for a while, we don't have a job. We don't have a fire. We call it jobs of fire. Mm-hmm. Station life can get a little bit tetchy. Like guys start picking at each other, you know, and, you know, it's not because we're quiet. We're doing other things, but a fire, a job is something that you want. And it's always at someone else's expense because it's not a nice thing. You don't want people's houses to catch a light. You don't want to, but the buzz is incredible off it. You know, you've done your job. You've gone in, you've put a fire out. You've hopefully saved someone's home. You've hopefully no one's got hurt, you know, all that sort of stuff. And that's, you've got to be a bit, what word can I use? A bit fucking crazy to think that, you know what I mean? And my wife, my thing is, the thing is, my wife,
in the office.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's, yeah, I come home. My wife knows if I come home and I've had a fire, she knows I don't sleep. I come off a bad, we came in up all night and I'm buzzing and I'm like,
yeah,
I will probably crash for a little while and then off I go again. But it's the adrenaline and there's nothing better than, within the realms of the fire service, is being at station in the appliance bay, changing your dirty kit over, and someone's running around getting cups of tea for everyone. You're changing your kit. You're in the showers. You know you've got a bit of time before you have to go back on the run, and everyone's just buzzing. It's a bizarre thing. If I was on the outside looking in, I think, what's wrong with these people? And there definitely is. That's the wonderful thing about the fire brigade is that I said once to a close friend of mine in the job, if I hadn't joined the fire service, I would never have met anyone like you in my life.
Yeah.
And that's, you meet so, the diversity is massive within it. So mm-hmm. I know I probably shouldn't use words like crazy and mental with regards to mental health, but that's not meant to primarily take offence to it. But you just have to realise that anyone that's in the fire service, anyone that's really sort of in tune with helping people and seeing the things that we see and doing the things that we do in both across all services, you've really got to love it. Well, there's something wrong with you. You know?
Yeah. No, I agree.
That's it.
So I guess other than the dark sense of humour, what are your coping mechanisms? Like, what do you do in terms of hobbies or when you're off duty, I guess, that help you maintain some kind of balance?
The balance comes from, I think outside interests are massively important. I think, like, you, I'm sure there's guys in the job and girls in the job that get very consumed by it. All their friends are firefighters. My best friend's a firefighter. I mean, we joined at roughly the same time. We were based at the same station on the same watch, and we've been like inseparable since, really. So he would be, if I have something, a difficulty, I phone him straight away. He understands, you know, and vice versa.
Yeah.
In terms of stuff that I do outside the job is I'm massively into fitness. So I do a lot of fitness. Before, I still did fitness, but before that I played rugby, which was another outlet, really. Walk my dogs, hiking, that sort of thing. Walk with the wife.
Yeah.
Socialize my other friends outside the job. That's really important, I think. It gives you that balance, mm-hmm. which I think is huge. And just see friends and family. I think being fit is a huge part of keeping yourself in the right mindset for the job. I think that's really important. It helps you, obviously, doing the job, but it helps you outside the job as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the endorphin release is a massive... It can be difficult, you know, come off a night shift and think, well, I'll go get in the gym now, or what have you, after you've had a nap or something when you get back off a night shift. But mm-hmm. often most of us do. I think being outdoors is hugely important for mental health. I love walking my dogs. It's like my second favourite thing to do outside of fitness, or might even be the first thing I like to do, to be honest with you, nowadays. But it's that's really important. And I think just being in contact with friends and family, that's the huge thing for us. And that's the thing about it, is if you were to ask my parents, massively, I mean, I could have done a lot of different things in my life, and I went down the services route. And I don't think my father or my mother could be more proud of me, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And that's something that is another driving force behind doing what we do, I think, is the pride that it gives other people as well. We've had conversations at station about this, and the boys will say, some of us get a bit down about it, more from the, as we said right at the beginning of the podcast, is like the financially, because they get pissed off having to work. Some guys don't just have a second job, they have two or three other jobs outside of it to make ends meet, pay for the kids and stuff. But when you start talking to them about the day they passed out of training school, and the pride that their parents had in them, and the fact that their grandparents and their parents and their friends, I've got a friend that's a firefighter. And that's a huge thing. And that does make such a difference to how you feel as well.
If there was one thing that you could change that would make your job easier, what would it be? Pretend there's no budgets or anything like that in terms of constraints.
What I would say is that everything appears to be done on the cheap, and I don't really understand it. It can make our life very difficult when systems break down at station, when you know there's a better system out there, because don't get me wrong, the younger fellows all get technology, you know, and and, you know, we're still using maps in the back of fire engines, you know, and it's just like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So in terms of budgets and stuff like that, the equipment's pretty decent, but I'd give us better equipment for sure. Our fire kit's good because it has to be. Everything comes down to money, basically, if I'm honest, within public service, doesn't it? That's essentially the problem. So give us better kit, as simple as that. But that makes your job easier. There's other things as well within the organisation that I think could be made simpler. You know, it depends on your station, how you train in some respects. We train pretty hard in terms of our actual training. We do for on the job stuff, and that's good, and that we keep our skill sets up. But again, it could be made a lot easier for us. There's things like that frustrate you because you know there's a simpler option or a better option, but for whatever reason, it's either, you know, making someone else money somewhere else, hence why you're not getting the the better equipment, or organizationally they're just so archaic they just don't want to change, and that's probably it. Is change would be the issue as well.
This is how it's always been done. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That's my exactly least
favorite.
That.
Well, it's always been like this. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, one thing I would say actually, which I would absolutely change, and having said change, you know, thinking about change, there's one thing that I think is difficult when you have civilians involved in the organization in terms of in a HR capacity, and they don't understand what's going on the ground. There's a huge disconnect between what we're seeing on the fire ground, as we call it, or out in the streets, and what they think is happening in an office. Do you know what I mean? And there's a huge disconnect there. And I know that's across all brigades, is that disconnect. Mm-hmm. When, you know, years gone by, well, way before I joined the job, when they had people who had been firefighters and had worked their way up to a level, they understood that just because someone's got a degree doesn't mean they're going to be a good officer or whatever it is just because they've got that degree. It doesn't make any sense. You have to understand the job in order to make decisions higher up. And that's where I think there is a... And that's not necessarily in terms of an operational sense. That's not where I'm going with it. I'm talking about HR. I'm talking about budgets. I'm talking about, you know, and don't get me wrong, I know firefighters might not make the best accountants, but just in terms of how things are, how money's spent and equipment used, I think what I'm trying to say is have the right people in the right positions, not just because of a degree or whatever, something along those lines.
No, I agree completely. I think it's the same thing that we often see in the ambulance service, is like the difference between people who sit in the management roles, who have worked their way up there and who have spent a lot of time on the ground themselves, frontline, just have so much more understanding of what the people beneath them are going through. And you can really see it in their like decision-making and their priorities, versus people who go into the management roles and stuff above us, who've never done that, or sometimes occasionally who haven't actually even worked in the health service. They've come across from a different sector.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, well, how on earth are you going to understand this? How on earth are you going to understand what the people underneath you are going through if you've never even worked in the industry? So I think, yeah, that would make a big difference for sure. Andy, I've loved having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming to have a chat and for sharing your stories with us. And the last question is, if our listeners met you or another firefighter tomorrow, what's the one question that you think they should ask?
Are you guys okay? You know, I don't know. It's difficult. Yeah. I don't really know what to say to that. We get some incredible, you see the opposite ends of the spectrum in my job. You see incredible kindness from members of the public, and more often than not, we are on the very positive end of the public, members of the public.
Yeah.
And they're absolutely fantastic. And then sometimes you see the other end where they're just difficult and they just need to keep out of the way. But essentially, I would say on the whole, I've had nothing but positive experience with members of the public. You know, there's nothing nicer in our game, in our job, where you're driving down the road and you get kids waving at you in the truck.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah.
It's always positive in that sense. And kids always want to come to fire stations and look at the trucks and squirt the hose and everything. And that's also really cool. But in terms of what question, I don't know. I've got to be honest. Sorry, I'm really crap stuff like that. I don't know. Sorry.
No, that's all right. That's all good. Thank you so much for chatting to me. It's been a great conversation and it's been really interesting to be able to have a chat about being a firefighter and the crossover between our jobs and stuff as well. We're here to provide an authentic voice for uniform professionals and give our listeners a realistic insight into the jobs that we do. And you've done just that as a firefighter, Andy. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kim.
Well, that's it for today's episode. We'll be back next week speaking with another uniform professional about what it's like beneath the blue lights. Thank you for being here, lending your ears to our frontline workers. We're here to shift the conversation, and we can't do that without you. Thank you to Andy Tweedy for being our guest today. Remember to follow us on @theparamedicpod on Twitter and @theparamedicpodcast on Instagram. If you found this podcast to be useful and enjoyed listening, please do leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, as it really helps other people like yourself find the show. Thank you to Pure Creation Media for producing the podcast. I'll see you next week.